So let me go over some of the results of the farmer survey. Based upon all the things we had heard, there are about 46% of the cropland in the Chesapeake Bay has structural practices on it. And a structural practice would be like a terrace, something that's actually on the landscape. We were also learned that conservation tillage is used on 88% of the land, cropland, in the bay. About 48% of that is no-till, and about 40% of it is some form of conservation tillage, mulch-till, strip-till, something like that. So about 88% is conservation tillage. Now, the thing that blew my mind was if you look at the cropland in the bay that has either a structural practice or a conservation tillage, a management practice, or some combination of both, 96% of the cropland in the bay has some sort of conservation applied to it, which is absolutely astounding. Now, there are areas that need work, particularly in the area of nitrogen management and phosphorus management. When we did the survey, we asked the producers to fill out the crops they grew in 2004, 2005, 2006. I'm sorry, it was 03 to 06 with the cropland data. And if there was even one thing out of order, we put them into a need treatment category. So they could be applying nitrogen, right time, right place, right method for 4 years, for 2 years out of the three, and if there was one out of order, we put it into a treatment need. But essentially, 80% of the bay cropland needs some form of treatment. 19% of that we would classify as needing a high level of treatment. 61% would be a moderate level of treatment. And then you got about 20% that is very low treatment needs. Nitrogen and phosphorus management are the big ones. In my book, the biggest item we need to look at is subsurface nitrogen loss. And the reason for that is that if you look at some of the challenges faced by agriculture in the Bay Area, the Bay Area it's tougher to farm in the Bay Area. I told you earlier about the Upper Mississippi report. If you look at the cropland in the Bay Area and look at the cropland in the Upper Mississippi, the Bay Area, we get about 8 inches more of rain a year. We have a higher percentage of highly erodible land, about twice on a percent basis, the amount of highly erodible land. We have about five times on a percent basis, the acres that have a high or moderately high leaching potential. And that's the area where I think we really need to work on. Now, the findings of the study, finally getting around to that, and I apologize for this long, drawn-out explanation. First is the voluntary incentive-based approach is working. We're confident that the voluntary approach is working. But two, there are several areas where we need to improve. There's opportunities out there, particularly in the area of nutrient management, where we can improve. We also know that targeting our resources will really improve our effectiveness. When you look at those acres with a high treatment need versus a moderate treatment need, you treat 1 acre in the high category, it's like treating 2 acres in the moderate category. Sometimes it's like treating 20 acres in the low category. So if you can focus on these the areas where we know need high treatment, then you multiply your impact and effectiveness. And the fourth thing is that comprehensive conservation planning and implementation is absolutely essential. We cannot view conservation practices, any single practice, as a panacea. because these things work in tandem. Let me give you an example. Take a soil, if you look at the coastal plains like in Maryland, Virginia, Delaware, there's thousands of different soil types, but if you look at a soil like Rumford or Evesboro, these are sandy soils. They're not only important to commodity crops, but if you look at Delmarva, they're also used for fruit and vegetable production. You look at some of the Pennsylvania soils or New York, West Virginia, that have high leaching potential. You could put a terrace on one of these fields, and the terrace will slow your sediment loss. You're going to control your sediment loss, but the terrace will back up the water, allow more water to infiltrate, so you could be exacerbating your subsurface nitrogen loss. So in cases like that, you need a terrace plus really good nutrient management. And when you look at nutrient management, you're looking at the right time, the right place, and the right method every single year. So that's what I meant by working in tandem with these things. I want to talk about one other thing here, and I don't mean to make anyone uncomfortable about this, but this is the final release of our report. We're very confident in the science here. We released a draft report last October on the seat, and we did so with the sincere desire to seek meaningful input. We weren't trying for some temporary advantage in the messaging wars or attempting to influence people one way or the other. I know in this town that may be hard to believe, but we were simply and honestly seeking scientific input. And we got it. The biggest change, if you look at the draft report last October to the final report today, is the percent of acres that move from the high critical treatment category to the moderate treatment category. One of the things we learned in the draft review process, we got better information on the plant uptake of nutrients in the winter. And the model, the APEX model, it resulted in estimates of erosion and sediment loss that were just too high. And using the old information, it inflated the estimates of these critical undertreated acres. So when the new science was added to the and the modeling routine was run, which incorporated the new information, we feel we have done a much better job of accounting for plant growth and the related nitrogen and phosphorus, particularly during the winter months. This reduced the number of acres in the high critical treatment area from 47% down to 19%. The overall numbers of acres really didn't change. Draft report had 81%. Final report has 80%. The big shift was within the treatment category, where a lot of the acres were kind of on the cusp, and they were listed as high, and with the new data, they fell to moderate. And I should note to you that this was not just done for the SEEP when the new information came out. It was done, we re-ran it for the Upper Mississippi, and it will be incorporated in all the new studies as well. In the Upper Mississippi, it really didn't change much, the data. And maybe Dr. Norfleet could correct me, but my guess is that it's a lot colder than Upper Mississippi. You have much less plant growth during the winter. So one of the things I have heard now is that I've heard rumors that some entities are saying that we fixed the model to reduce these high treatment or critically undertreatment acres. Nothing could be further from the truth. I just want to make the offer right now. We believe our science is impeccable. And if any credible source has concerns about this, we're more than happy to sit down with them, throw the doors open, go over with them, and show them everything we have. I guess I'll close for now with the basis of this. The voluntary approach is working. There's still a lot we can do, but a lot of what we can do is going to be relatively tweaks in the nutrient management aspect. I am much more bullish on the Bay today than I was in the past. Congress gave us some incredible resources in the 08 Farm Bill. We have tremendous partners in the states. We are working closely with the state agencies and local conservation districts, farm groups, and conservation groups. Our farmers are more than willing to do their part. And I am confident that from the perspective of agriculture, we can fix our issues, and we can do it in a fairly short amount of time. And Susan, with that, I would open it up for questions.
We do have a question coming from Chris Clayton from DPN.
A couple of things. First, how does this create or work with the Chesapeake Bay model that the EPA has? And you had indicated at the NCBA meeting that there were differences there. How does this factor in there? And how do you then, I mean, this really only addresses cropland, so how do you look and factor in the livestock impacts into actual overall practices and conservation practices through all of agriculture?
Okay, Chris. Thanks. I'd like to first let me deal with the remarks I made at the meeting out there with the cattlemen. I had said at that point that you mentioned the conservation. I specifically said the conservation tillage used in the model was, I think I actually said it was inaccurate because we were showing 88% and they were showing 50%. I didn't say the model was flawed. I just said some of the data going into it. I have since met with EPA, Chris, and they have agreed to use the conservation tillage data from the CEEP report. In fact, we've agreed to sit down and within 30 days come up with a list of items that can be readily used by them in the Bay model. And I've also, they've opened their doors to train me on how their stuff works. As far as the comparison, I don't feel comfortable making a comparison between the CEEP report and the Bay model. It's two models for two different purposes. Ours was had the genesis in the 02 Farm Bill where Congress wanted to find more information on how conservation practices works. Ours is only statistically reliable at that 40,000-foot level, at the four-digit HUC level. The Bay model was developed like over 25 years, so there's all sorts of stuff in there I don't know about and don't understand, and I would defer to EPA on that. But it's really, for the purposes, it's apples and oranges. We're going to use ours, Chris, to inform our programs to do a better job with EQIP and the QIP and the various Farm Bill programs. I should also say we're also going to update our survey again, Chris, this fall. We realize our data it's just that snapshot in time. It's 03 to 06. A lot of things have changed since 06, particularly since the 08 Farm Bill, and we've had the large increases in funding. But we're going to, this fall, go back to those 700 sites, go back to those same farmers. Hopefully they'll still talk to us. And update that survey information. Plus, we're going to add another 700 sites, Chris. So this time next year, we're going to have a more robust, more up-to-date CEEP report on what the Bay is actually accomplishing.